One summer, my family and I visited Orwell Corners, the site of an old farming village on Prince Edward Island. If there is anything that English speakers know about the island, it is that Lucy Maud Montgomery lived there and used it as a setting for her stories about Anne Shirley, the orphan girl and eponymous heroine of Anne of Green Gables and a spate of other novels. Anne is an excellent student, and in fact, much of the interest of the novels centers around the life of the mind. Whether Anne's friendship with her fellow student Diana, her rivalry, and then her deepening regard for Gilbert Blythe, or her having to balance her longing to learn with her duties to the family that opened its home to her. Perhaps that explains the enormous popularity of the books in Japan, that land of studiousness, especially among Japanese women, several of whom we saw in the lobby of our hotel. The rich red clay of Prince Edward Island was good for growing potatoes and serious Presbyterians. That became clear to us at Orwell Corners. There was a one-room schoolhouse on the site, something that is irresistible to me and my family. It opened in 1895 and closed only late in 1969. The village, too, closed, that is, the people moved away, so that what is there now is a restoration. But the woman who worked the general store told us that she was among the last graduates of the school in the year when it closed. She loved that school dearly. I have met a few people who attended one-room schools, and every one of them has beamed with gratitude and delight, remembering the peculiar features. Boys chopping wood for the burner, a two-seater outhouse in the back, the older students sometimes helping the younger with their lessons. The younger overhearing the lessons of their elders and learning them almost before they learned them. Everyone knowing everyone in their families, play in the yard before and after, a feeling of being home. In their justified pride, the caretakers of the schoolhouse, now a museum piece of Canadiana, had collected actual lessons written up by the first students of the school in 1895. I don't think they offered these artifacts as a reproach to the modern world, but they surely were that. Two of the lessons stand out in my mind. Each took up a single sheet of paper. One of them was headed by a couple of verses of devotional poetry. Beneath the verses, the student had parsed every word in the verses, describing what part of speech it was, what grammatical form it bore, case, number, and gender for nouns and adjectives, person, number, tense, mood, and voice for verbs, what function it served in its clause, and what relation it bore to other words. The student's performance was entirely correct. The other lesson was obviously an introductory one. The student wrote a noun in its singular and plural forms, in the nominative, genitive, dative, and accusative cases. The second student was clearly one of the younger children, as you could tell from an occasional roughness in his printing. The word in question was doulos, Greek for servant. The children were evidently studying Koine Greek, so as to be able to read the New Testament in the original tongue. I will give more examples of what our schools once taught. But that is not my first point here. Sure, none of my college freshmen, except for those very few who have both studied Latin and been instructed in Latin's relations to English, knows any grammar. There is no grammar in grammar school, and there is not much school there either. Yet before we even get to that, we have to address the massive thing that stares out at us from its 50 blank windows. It is not that Prince Edward Island has changed in the way that an organism grows and develops its latent capacities. It is not that the school has changed, as a young lad will find his voice dropping into the tenor and the baritone, while his arms and legs and shoulders catch up with his hands and feet, and youth blooms and flourishes and becomes manhood in its prime. It is that old...